mother is suffering cancer and who is on a protocol for that cancer using zeolite and bentonite clay. Now, if you are a follower of Tony Pantelaresco, you're going to be laughing and shaking your head. But let's just take a moment of silence for our fallen brothers and sisters who, unfortunately, have fallen for the supplement psyop industry and are still falling for the supplements, the psyops, the marketing, the sales tactics, and the lack of scientific evidence. I understand that it is a very desperate thing, I can imagine, especially if you don't know that much about health. Maybe, you know, if someone's suffering cancer, they are desperate for a solution. And we discussed that in our supplement video, 2.5 supplements I would never take. But that does not mean falling for what I would say one of the worst and most toxic minerals that is constantly being pushed in the health food industry. And that is all these silica and silicone products. There's a lot to talk about in this field. But today we're going to be going through a paper that Tony put out, one of my favorite papers. It's one of those ones where he puts all the research, like a bunch of research papers together in one document. We'll go through that. We'll discuss a little bit specifically about zeolite. But I find the scientific information regarding zeolite a little bit conflicting at the moment, personally, at my own stage in the research. So I'm going to be drawing the connection that I see, and then you can go and make of that what you will. Okay, let's start, before we go into Tony's paper, let's start by watching this video. It has some important points, I think, that will be relevant later on.
Volcanoes erupt across shifting tectonic plates. Ash falls from the sky. It mixes with water and, over millions of years, transforms into a unique category of mineral.
Now let's be very clear. When we talk about the heat involved in a volcano, and this is another psyop I think that they give to for autistic children, like the volcanic ash thing. When we're talking about the heat involved in a volcano, this is the heat and the chemical circumstances, let's say. That's not the best word, that's not the most relevant word, but we'll go with it. The chemical circumstances that will create particles and materials in the nanoscale. And if you understand anything about the nanoscale, you understand that properties change extremely, very greatly when taking miniaturizing to the nanoscale, resulting in a loss of toxicity and also a loss of stealth within the body, because nanotechnology can bypass the protective barriers of the body, all sorts of them, because of the extra small size. So whenever we talk about like something from a volcano, just think it could be nano. It's very possible that this has some kind of nanoparticulate matter in it because of the heat involved in the volcano.
But you have to look much closer to see it. These are zeolites, microscopic porous volcanic minerals. The unique honeycomb structure of a specific zeolite called clinoptilolite gives it an incredible ability to trap and help remove toxins from the human body. When you ingest purified, supplemental clinoptilolite, it travels through your digestive tract, attracting fungal, bacterial, and heavy metal toxins that you've recently ingested or that your body is already trying to eliminate. Clinoptilolite traps heavy metal toxins via ion exchange. Whereas with larger toxins, clinoptilolite binds to its surface, preventing the substance from further interactions. Then, the clinoptilolite and its accumulated toxins leave your body during elimination. originating from prehistoric...
I'd actually like to make a note there. Tony Pantelaresco... Tony Pantelaresco actually talked about how the silica doesn't get out of the body. I personally haven't seen that research yet. I can't talk to it. But I believe in... I trust Tony Pantelaresco. So I'm sure, in 2 months when I'm doing some research, I'll be like, oh, yeah, well, actually, he was right. But at the current stage, I'll just be very clear. I can't speak to that.
Volcanoes. Clinoptilolite is a powerful supplemental ingredient to use during or after exposure to toxins.
So it's beautiful marketing. But when we go to a lot of the product pages for zeolite, you actually find that they use the word ultrafine. And ultrafine is a synonym for nano, just like monoatomic, just like angstrom, just like zero dimensional. All of these are synonyms for nanotechnology. Now, this alone, just for me, something being nano alone would immediately remove. I'll never touch it. There are no circumstances, no marketing. You couldn't pay me $1 billion to take it because I believe that I understand the health risks associated with any nanotechnology. But there's more. So let's go and look at clinoptilolite. Clinoptilolite is a natural zeolite composed of a microporous arrangement of silica, which is silicon dioxide, and alumina. So involved in the zeolite, as far as I can tell with my research, is aluminium. Now, I don't know how healthy that is, but I don't like the idea of putting aluminium inside my body. But then let's continue. This is all about silica. And this is like the silica industry, really. Whether you have the zeolite, diamaceous earth, horsetail. I think there are other also silica, well, what I would call silica psyops, that are also fooling a lot of people. So let's talk about silica. There's a lot regarding, silicon dioxide toxicology that we can talk about. But we're going to pick a few today. So first, we're going to be going through a paper that Tony sent me a while back. And it is, Okay. Silicon dioxide nanoparticles induced neurobehavioral impairments by disrupting microbiota gut-brain axis. So immediately here, we established that silica or silicon dioxide, they're the same thing, synonyms, is in this zeolite. And then we also established that this is, we are suddenly speaking about on the nanoscale and silica on the nanoscale. And in fact, I'm glad I mentioned this so I remember. Because if we look at this paper on clinoptilolite, in particular, natural clinoptilolite is made of randomly oriented stacks of nanoplatelets with a thickness of 40 nanometers and the other two sizes of a few hundred microns. So I would imagine that the nanoscale structures in the clinoptilolite would be varying based on different things. I don't think it would be uniform, like, oh, it's just 40 nanometers. But this is more proof that we're talking about silica on a nanoscale. I think Tony mentioned also before that silica is only on a nanoscale. I don't know about that. Again, I haven't seen any information on that. I'm somewhat new to the scientific literature on silica, just because it is so wide. You've seen us cover before the silicon dioxide, also with relation to the gut-brain axis, shutting off the communication to the immune system through various frequencies and all of this stuff. It's, let me open that video if you're interested, because it was quite fascinating. This one, nanovaccines in your food. And this is also going through another one of the papers that Tony put out there. But let's start with this one. Silicon dioxide nanoparticles induced neurobehavioral impairments by disrupting microbiota gut-brain axis. Now, the gut-brain axis regulates the constant communication pathways between the nervous and endocrine systems. It modulates our behavior and our mental state. So, for example, it can cause or prevent depression. Let's read the background. Let me make sure that you can see that well. Yeah. Silicon dioxide nanoparticles are widely used as additives in the food industry, and this is often as an anti-caking agent, with controversial health risk. Gut microbiota is a new and hot topic in the field of nanotoxicity. It also contributes a novel and insightful view to understand the potential health risk of food-grade silicon dioxide nanoparticles in children who are susceptible to the toxic effects of nanoparticles. Methods. In current study, the young mice were orally administrated with vehicle or silicon dioxide nanoparticle solution for 28 days. The effects, so this is talking about what they did in this particular study. The effects of silicon dioxide nanoparticles on the gut microbiota were detected by 165 ribosomal RNA gene sequencing, and the neurobehavioral functions were evaluated by open field test and Morris water maze. Ooh, what is this? Is this measuring... Aha! So they tested the mice using basically a spatial and long-term memory test. Okay, the level of inflammation, tissue integrity of gut, and classical indicators involved in gut-brain, gut-liver, and gut-lung axis were all assessed. Our results demonstrated that silicon dioxide nanoparticles significantly caused the spatial learning and memory impairments and locomotor inhibition. Spatial learning, this is how we map our environment, basically spatially. Memory impairment and locomotor inhibition are control. Although silicon dioxide nanoparticles did not trigger evident intestinal or neuronal inflammation, they remarkably damaged the tissue integrity. The microbial diversity within the gut was unexpectedly enhanced in silicon dioxide nanoparticle treated mice, mainly manifested by the increased abundance of two types of bacteria. Intriguingly, we demonstrated for the first time that the neurobehavioral impairments and brain damage induced by silicon dioxide nanoparticles might be distinctively associated with the disruption of the gut-brain axis by specific chemical substances originated from the gut, such as this and that. Unapparent changes in liver or lung tissues further suggested the absence of gut-liver axis or gut-lung axis regulation upon oral silicon dioxide nanoparticle exposure. Conclusions. This study provides a novel ID that silicon dioxide nanoparticles induce neurotoxic effects, that the silicon dioxide nanoparticle induced neurotoxic effects may occur through distinctive gut-brain axis, showing no significant impact on either the gut-lung axis or gut-liver axis. That's fine. These findings raise the exciting prospect that maintenance and coordination of gastrointestinal functions may be critical for protection against the neurotoxicity of infant foodborne silicon dioxide. And clearly one of the main concerns and motivations for creating this paper is the exposure of children to silicon dioxide who are in an extremely vulnerable segment of the population that is exposed to this rubbish. And if you watched our investigation on nanotechnology in baby formula, that is another one of the nanomaterials that they put in baby formula, silicon dioxide. Which it makes sense, if it's a baby formula that's a powder, anti-caking agent, which silicon dioxide is used as, it makes sense. Okay, now onto our main heavy hitter. The nanosilica hazard, another variable entity. So this paper was put out there by Tony Pantelaresco maybe 7 or 8 years ago. The study itself was published in 2010. You can find this paper yourself by going to powerofthepulse.com/Tony and then coming over to biofilm and AI, I think. Nope. Apologies. I keep on... There's so much good information in here. I keep on forgetting which one is which. Was it this one? Nope. This one? Nano Basics? Ah, here we go. Okay. And it's this one. The third one, sorry. Nano Productions, Manifestations, Resolutions, and Protections. And then if you click that, you open it up. We can close our Zeolite Ultrafine Powder. And then you go to the top. Oh, zero. It doesn't like putting the page, so we'll just put it up here. You see this, and then you hit the nanosilica hazard, another variable entity. And here we go. And you can see Tony's comments on the side as well, which are often in these investigations very, very useful. All right, let me just make sure that this is in frame. Oh, perfect. Let's make this a little bit bigger. Just so if you're watching this on your phone, hopefully you'll be able to read the text. A little bit like that. Okay, cool. Abstract. Silicate nanoparticles are produced on an industrial scale and are an addition to a growing number of commercial products. Silicon dioxide nanoparticles also have great potential for a variety of diagnostic and therapeutic applications in medicine. Contrary to the well-studied crystalline micron-sized silica, so there is silica on the micron scale. Maybe what Tony meant when he said that all the silica is nano is that all industrially used as silica is on the nano scale because it's easier to make or cheaper to make and superior properties and part of the agenda, of course. Relatively little information exists on the toxicity of its amorphous and nano-size forms. Of course, remember, this is 2010. If for some reason somebody is like so brainwashed and they look at all the toxicity and they heard this, they hear this paper as well, they watch our video on the silicon dioxide nanocarrier system, and they say, oh well, no, because it's, you know, it's, they still somehow defend it. Where was I going with this? I just blanked. I think the authorities are targeting me with AI frequencies. Where are we going with this? Someone defending... All right, so if someone were to go and, like, even in the face of all the evidence that we've already presented and are going to present in a few minutes, even if someone were to come up here and say, oh, well, no, because it's still safe and these are just a few studies and whatever, like, we can provide another 20 studies. I remember when I first started, I did a podcast on titanium dioxide and silicon dioxide effects on the reproductive system, causing infertility, causing DNA damage. There is so many papers out there. You just need to go and look and just go like nano silicon dioxide toxicology and go research it for yourself. And, you know, maybe look at that and consider it before falling for some, you know, nice guy in a nice shirt in front of a high-tech camera telling you that he can save you from your autism or your cancer or vaccine shedding, because that's something I know Karen Kingston promotes. Oh, you know, zeolites, because it adsorbs to graphene derivatives. Well, like, yeah, okay, maybe it adsorbs to graphene derivatives. Maybe it's let's assume zeolite, for example, is the greatest chelator in the world. There's nothing like it. It doesn't matter if it is still toxic to the body, if it's still on a nanoscale, if it still has the potential to accumulate long-term, translocate, accumulate, and agglomerate inside the body. And Tony's talked about this specific action of crystallizing a silicon dioxide happening inside the blood. If you right now go and take any silica supplement, and then you go and look an hour later under your blood, you will see the silica crystallizing in your blood. But hey, you know, it's marketable, you know. These gurus will tell people, oh, well, we'll save you. Yeah, just take this miracle. Anytime you hear about a miracle supplement or a miracle mineral, you need to be very, 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 very suspicious, skeptical. Critically think. Ask questions. And these gurus don't like people asking questions because they don't know the answers. I don't think a lot of these gurus that, for example, will push diamaceous earth or bentonite clay or zeolite or nano silver or nano gold actually know the harm that they are doing. Because at the end of the day, they want to make lots of money. So it is not in their values nor in their best interest to ask too many questions or know too much or dig deep into the scientific truth about any of these substances, because then they're a miracle supplement that they can go and market every day and make lots of money on. Well, now they actually know that it's not that good, that it actually may cause infertility, may cause cancer. Like, it's used as a I'd never even heard of that as a cancer therapy. Like, silicon dioxide can cause cancer because of the power of its DNA damaging characteristics and properties. If you damage the DNA of a cell and that cell, and then, of course, let's actually connect this. So the silicon dioxide damages the DNA, and it also cuts off the immune system communication to that cell. That is by definition cancer, because you have a cell that is no longer being repaired, that cannot be accessed, that has been damaged, that cannot be repaired. This is what forms cancer. All right, I know I went on a long rant. I'm just going to take a sip of water and then let's continue, and I'll try and keep the ranting to a minimum. All right. Oh man, it hurts sometimes. Okay. Because nanoparticles possess novel properties, kinetics, and unusual bioactivity, their potential biological effects may differ greatly from those of micron-sized bulk materials. Regular elemental size is very, very different to the nanoscale. Properties change at the nanoscale. In this review, we summarize the physico-chemical properties of the different nano-sized silica materials that can affect their interaction with biological systems, with a specific emphasis on inhalation exposure. Okay. We discuss recent in vitro and in vivo investigations into the toxicity of nano-silica. In vivo is inside the biological organism. In vitro is in a petri dish. Both crystalline and amorphous. Most of the in vitro studies of silicon dioxide nanoparticles report results of cellular uptake, so it enters the cell, crossing the cell membrane, size and dose-dependent cytotoxicity, so the silicon dioxide is toxic to the cells based on its size and the number or the amount dosage, increased reactive oxygen species level, and pro-inflammatory stimulation. Now, if the reactive oxygen species levels increases over the cell's ability to produce and use antioxidants, like glutathione, which fights against free radicals and reactive oxygen species, then what happens is that the oxidation increases and you have oxidative stress damaging the cell. And of course, a prolonged oxidative stress then damages the DNA of the cell. Okay. Evidence from a... Okay, this is just highlighted. That's all. Okay. Evidence from a limited number of in vivo studies demonstrates largely reversible lung inflammation granuloma formation and focal emphysema. Focal emphysema is a localized region of emphysema in the lung that is larger than the alveola and often associated with call workers' pneumoconiosis. This is also known as localized pulmonary emphysema. Blebs and bulle may also be included as focal emphysema. With no progressive lung fibrosis. This is actually somewhat of a recurring theme with the silicon dioxide toxicity that was on a low level for a short amount of time. a lot of the papers actually say, yes, it was reversible. We just needed to help clear it out and blah, blah, blah. And the body recovered pretty well. So if you haven't maybe fallen for any of the silica psyops like diatomaceous earth or zeolites or silicon dioxide in general, like you may have taken, for example, the supplements with the silica fillers in them. If you haven't, then I'm quite confident that with anti-nano baths and anti-nano devices and general re-strengthening of the immune system, that you can recover quite easily from any of the potential damages that this has caused. If you have, of course, fallen for some of these psyops, you're here now, that's okay. But you're going to want to take your response very seriously. You're going to want to make sure that you absolutely cut off any of these toxicants, exposure to these toxicants, and you're going to want to really take very seriously the anti-nano devices, the anti-nano baths, and there are a few other supplements that you would specifically take to help the body with that as well. Okay, clearly more research with standardized materials is needed to enable comparison of experimental data for the different forms of nanosilicas and to establish which physicochemical properties are responsible for the observed toxicity of silicon nanoparticles. I'll tell you, the physicochemical properties that of silica that induce toxicity are the nano scale. Over the past decade, the definition of nanoparticles has been controversial. Yes, there's 1 to 100 and 1 to 1,000. For toxicology-based purposes, I hold that 1 nanometer to 1,000 nanometers should be the established definition. Nanoparticles are commonly defined as objects with a diameter less than 100 nanometers, but no clear size cutoff exists, and this usual boundary does not appear to have a solid scientific basis. Other definitions of nanoparticles have been proposed, and the most recent proposal is based on surface area rather than size. This is a good point, actually, because the greater surface area, the more toxicity, and that is one of the properties and considerations in nanotoxicology, is that when you nanoscale a substance or an element, it generally has the surface area is exponentially greater. Nanoparticles should have a specific surface area of less than 60 meters. What is 60 meters squared divided by centimeters cubic? I might have missed a few math classes, but I don't know what that means. Thus reflect, it's their way of measuring the surface area. That's what I understand. Therefore, reflecting the critical importance of this parameter in governing the reactivity and toxicity of nanomaterials. Physicochemical properties that may be important in understanding the toxic effects of nanomaterials include primary particle size, agglomeration and aggregation state, size distribution, shape, crystal structure, chemical composition, surface chemistry, surface charge, and porosity. Tony's comment here is, this basically tells you that there is no form of nano which is safe, and with so many variables that can lead to high levels of toxic side effects, nanotoxicity is going to be inevitable. Silica is the common name for materials composed of silicon dioxide and occurs in crystalline and amorphous forms. Crystalline silica exists in multiple forms. Quartz, and more specifically, alpha quartz, is a widespread and well-known material. Upon heating, alpha quartz is transformed into beta quartz, tridymite, and cristobalite. Porosil is the family name for porous crystalline silica. Quartz exists in natural and synthetic forms, whereas all porosils are synthetic. This is something I hear sometimes. Oh, but our zeolite is organic and 100% natural, it's harvested from a farm. Like, yeah, uranium is also natural. Amorphous silica can be divided into natural specimens. Ah, listen to this. Amorphous silicate can be divided into natural specimens, diamaceous earth. And this is, Tony mentioned, this is what they were feeding the cattle, and this is actually used in agriculture against small pests. Like if you have a slug problem, they'll tell you, oh, use some diamaceous earth. Now, why does diamaceous earth, how does diamaceous earth work on the slugs? Well, it has literally like nano edges, nano blades on the nano scale that actually rip apart the soft, whatever, horrible, I think it's like a mucous membrane or something. I don't know what else to call it, of the slugs. It rips them apart. Can that not happen inside of your own stomach? Can that not happen inside the stomach of the cattle that they were feeding this diamaceous earth to before they even knew what nanotechnology was? Nanotechnology wasn't even a thing, and they were feeding the cattle diamaceous earth. And it was causing all of these problems, but it was cheaper, it was easier. And of course it fed into the agenda. It didn't help people get healthier, it attacked their immune systems. It loaded them with nanoparticulate matter that has so many health repercussions associated with it. Diamaceous earth. Opal and silica glass, right? This is actually a point my mother uses. She says, well, what is silica or silicon? A silicon, well, what's it? Actually, no, let me get this right. She says, what is glass? Okay, so she says, silicon is, what is sand made of? Let me get this right. Silica, right, okay. So, sand is made out of silica. Now, what is made out of sand? Glass. So she says, would you eat sand? And this is like one of the most basic, non-necessarily like scientifically complicated. But I actually forgot about this, but I should have actually mentioned it at the start because it may be easier for some people to comprehend. Would you willfully eat sand? Would you go to the beach and not, and you know, your children play in the sand and they get sand in their mouth. Would you tell them, oh, swallow it. It's good because it'll grab heavy metals and chelate them out of your body. Or will you tell them, no, this will possibly rip your stomach lining. Diamaceous earth, opal and silica glass and human-made products. The application of synthetic amorphous silica, especially silica nanoparticles, has received wide attention in a variety of industries. Silica nanoparticles are produced on an industrial scale as additives to cosmetics. This is in a lot of cosmetics. It's not the most the most used nanomaterial, but I guarantee you, if you have, you know, And don't tell me your makeup is natural. We've talked, if you're new to this, we've talked about it a number of times. You can check our Rumble channel. We've done a lot of work on that. But, you know, there is no natural makeup. But silica and silicon dioxide, because let's be very clear, they actually don't often put silica in the ingredients of the makeup. They put silicon dioxide. They put aluminium silicates as well. But silicon dioxide is used in a lot of cosmetics. Your foundation, your makeup. Your lipstick, possibly your blush, possibly some of the black stuff you ladies put on your eyes and around your eyes and above your eyes and under your eyes. I'm probably like, what, half an hour in, I've offended about every single viewer that's watching. There's no getting around it. Goodbye, everyone. cosmetics, drugs, this is also used a lot in the pharmaceutical industry, as well as an approved filler in supplements. You'll find this a lot, you know, you go and look in the inactive ingredients of your, you know, guru shmuru super healthy supplement, and you'll find silica. Yeah, we're taking all this zinc and selenium, but we're also loading ourselves with this toxic nanomaterial that was approved as a filler when they could have just approved sugar as a filler. But no, they had to, you know, the regulatory bodies that refuse to regulate nanotechnology properly and nanoproducts and nanofoods properly, well, they're happy with putting nanotechnology in your supplements as a filler. Printer toners, so this is also would be airborne, if you're like in signage or printing or something like that. Varnishes and food. In addition, nanosilica is developed for a host of biomedical and biotechnological applications, such as cancer therapy, DNA transfection, drug delivery, and enzyme immobilization. Excuse me. These guys recently reviewed the impact of nanosilica on basic biology, medicine, and agro-nanoproducts. What are agro-nanoproducts? Well, you have your seed starter, your fertilizer, your pesticide, your herbicide, your foliar spray, which is the spray on the leaves. Fungicide, I think I missed one of the biocides that they use in agriculture, but that's fine. With the growing commercialization of nanotechnology products, human exposure to silicon dioxide nanoparticles is increasing, and many aspects related to the size of these nanomaterials have raised concerns about safety. Until recently, most research has focused on silica particles of 0.5 microns to 10 microns, or micrometers, you can say, mainly in crystalline forms. But nanosilica may have different toxicological properties as compared with larger particles. The unique physicochemical properties of nano-sized silica that makes them attractive for industry. Those same properties that make nanotechnology attractive for use in industrial applications may present potential hazards to human health. Spelt out there in bold letters. Well, that's not necessarily bold. But okay. Including an ability to penetrate intracellular targets in the lung and systemic circulation. Biocompatibility is a critical issue for the industrial development of nanoparticles. Even though no acute cytotoxicity has been observed or reported, the uptake of the nanoparticles by cells may eventually lead to perturbation of intracellular mechanisms. The ability of silica-coated nanomaterials, so this is actually a good point, there are nanomaterials that are functionalized or coated with silicon dioxide, but you may have like I think I saw before like gold silicon dioxide coated nanoparticles. The ability of silica coated nanomaterials to penetrate the blood-brain barrier also strongly suggests that extensive studies are required to clarify the potential chronic toxicity of these materials. And this is what is being sold as an anti-cancer therapy. This is what is being sold to people that are worried about the bioweapon shedding. Just imagine that for a moment. There are so many desperate people that are in a dire health situation, probably, that watch the guru shmurus of the internet, that are looking desperately for a solution, and are given as a solution something that crosses, for example, the blood-brain barrier, that causes oxidative stress, DNA damage, possible infertility, possible cancer, possible organ damage, possible neurodegenerative diseases, possible autoimmune diseases. And this is the solution that is marketed simply because some gurus didn't do their own research. You see me, you don't have to be entirely scientifically literate to read papers and do a little bit of research. You don't have to spend, 3 hours in front of a camera like I do. Just do a little bit of research. Ask some questions. And you may find that a lot of the products that are marketed as being so amazing and so great are actually extremely damaging. All right, let's take a 1 minute break and then get back to the toxicology of silicon dioxide or silica.
The interbody nano network, not just a neural interface linking your minds up as a hive mind, but also linking your bodies up so that your bodies, every single aspect of your body, can be monitored by the computer, by AI. Moderna has said that the vaccine is an operating system. That's what they're installing into you, is an operating system. You think about it, graphene-based operating system. They can adjust signals in your body, so therefore they can affect your biology, they can affect your thoughts, and it's like there's little glitches there, parts of the memory are missing, and it's like there's been some sort of a takeover. Did you ever ask to be filled full of a vaccine that's going to hook you up to a neural net? Did you ever give Elon Musk permission to launch all those satellites into the sky and put all this nanotech into your body for your own good? I mean, this is just next level stuff, next level transhumanism. Now, when we talk about smart cities, and I've been warning you about this for so long, like since 2012, where I was talking about how they're going to genetically modify us from the inside out and how vaccines are a great delivery system for it. Injecting nanotech into rats, and they were able to switch the genes on and off in the rats using radio waves. This is back in 2008 or 2009. They're putting devices on the heads of cats and changing their emotion with electrical stimulation. As people will get hooked up to this and they'll start saying things and thinking things, and they won't even know that it's not their thoughts.
All right. A number of silica nanoparticles have recently been shown to cause adverse health effects in vitro and in vivo in the lab, in some kind of lab environment in a petri dish, and in vivo. However, most of the studies have used poorly characterized particles in terms of their composition and physicochemical properties. Yeah, that's a good point, but you know, at the same time, there is no regulation on the kind of quality assurance of nanoparticles synthesized by companies that use them in agrochemicals or nanoproducts or food or whatever it is. The distinct physicochemical properties of nanoparticles indeed determine their interaction with the cell within the cell, within the cell. So it's not just about this is a silicon dioxide nanoparticle. It's about the size, the shape, the functionalization, the way it was synthesized, all of these things. And even subtle differences in such properties can modulate the toxicity and modes of action. This is what we mean when we talk about nanoparticles being highly programmable. It means that you can manipulate very, very, very small, you can manipulate very minimally different characteristics of the particle to change its effects in biological systems, its properties. You have seen how gold on the regular scale is golden colored. Take it to the nanoscale, it could be pink, red, even green, blue, all based on the size and the shape, which changes the light refraction properties of the nano gold. That's a little tip for all of you guys that are like, oh yeah, nano colloidal gold, yay. If it's pink or red, I would recommend staying away from it unless you wish some serious nanomethyls to be directly and voluntarily ingested into your body, which will probably translocate, accumulate, agglomerate, and cause serious toxicological impact in whatever organ or tissue that the nanogold that you took is programmed to accumulate in. The distinct physicochemical properties of nanoparticles indeed... we read that. Okay. Although silica nanoparticles could certainly provide benefits to society, Yeah, maybe in devices, in things that we never put on or in our bodies, maybe. Their interaction with biological systems and potential toxic effects must be carefully addressed. In this review, we discuss silica nanomaterials with a special attention to the physicochemical properties that can affect their potential in interaction with biological systems. We aim to provide an overview of the recent in vitro and in vivo investigations of the toxicity of nanosilica, both in crystalline and amorphous forms, rather than the toxicity of micron-sized silica and quartz. A summary of the present knowledge on the potential toxic effects of nano-sized silica particles is needed because their toxicological pattern appears distinct from that of micron-sized silica particles. This seems to be applying strongly that even in a micron size, the silicon dioxide has issues with safety. Possibly. I'm not sure if that's what it's implying, but okay. Synthesis and characterization of silica materials. Classification of natural and synthetic silica materials. Silica is the name given to materials with the chemical formula of silicon dioxide. Silicon dioxide, silicas, a silicon... Right, so they just put up I'm not sure what this is called, the chemical notation, I'd say. Silicas can be amorphous or crystalline, porous or non-porous, anhydrous or hydroxylated, regardless of their natural or synthetic nature. Wow, okay. So whether it is natural or synthetic, you can have all of these variations in both the natural and the synthetic silicas. At the end of the day, you know, if anyone ever tells you, oh, but it's natural, but it's organic, like that's about 50 years behind the technology and the assaults that we are facing. But just tell them, like, yeah, but uranium is toxic. Natural. Aluminium is natural. Let's think of something else. One more. Come up with some radioactive element. Let's see. I don't know. I can't remember the periodic table of elements. Come up with some radioactive elements. So uranium is one. Okay, let's say neptunium. Say, well, neptunium is natural. It's mined. It's extracted. Does that mean it's healthy? You know, organic just means carbon-based. Regardless of their natural or synthetic nature. Okay, in silicon material, the silicon atom is in tetrahedral coordination with four oxygen atoms. So that's the silicon dioxide. I thought di would be... Oh, okay, because it's... Okay, I'm actually confused there, because I thought it's two oxygens, and now you're saying four oxygens. Okay. Theoretically, an infinite variation of 3D ordered structures can be built from oxygen-sharing silicate tetrahedra. Theoretically, an infinite variety of 3D ordered structures can be built from oxygen-sharing silicate tetrahedra. The number of known crystalline silica materials is limited, which leaves much room for research and development. In amorphous silica, the tetrahedra are randomly connected. In nature, amorphous silica can have different origins. Silica can be condensed from vapors emitted in volcanic eruptions. Natural silica can also be deposited from supersaturated natural water or polymerized in living organisms, biogenic silica. These amorphous biogenic silicas can be found as isolated particles, skeletal structures, or surface elements in different living organisms. Many microcrystalline silica minerals, such as flint, chert, and chalcedony, are derived from biogenic silica after crystallization by compaction. Diatomaceous earth occurs at various stages of transformation, and therefore often exhibits both crystalline and amorphous silica constituents. It's like a very toxic cocktail. Physicochemical characteristics of synthetic silica materials related to toxicity. The silica materials presenting a toxicological hazard to human health are mainly synthetic materials and in natural quartz. The physicochemical properties of silica materials largely depend on the synthetic procedures used for their preparation. Therefore, we will briefly discuss silica synthesis processes. Silica synthesis. Silica is mainly synthesized from an aqueous solution with monomeric silicic acid. Oh, and that's the four, I assume, the four oxygens. Not sure. Let's see. Or from a vapor of silicon compound with such as silicon tetrachloride. Water glass is a concentrated alkaline sodium silicate solution with let's just see how this is pronounced on Google. Say Google definition, because otherwise some of the other there's no Google. Composition in corresponding to sodium I don't know how to say that. What is that? Silicon trioxide. Sodium metasilicate. Oh, right. Okay. Disodium. So there's two sodium. So disodium trisilicate or disodium metasilicate. It is the most common reagent for silica production in aqueous solution. Okay. Colloidal silica particles. Okay. Let's take a few minutes break. I don't think we need to go through the different synthesis processes unless it's relevant. So I'll go through this quickly and hopefully save some time for you watching this. So we'll be back in a few minutes.
She's like, have you been having, you know, jaw pain, headaches, spinal pain? I was like, yes. And it's only been on like one side of my spine. And that was the side that the majority of the spike protein was running through. I knew that there was a major issue going on with the graphene oxide. One of the things that I've always known is that mRNA vaccines do shed.
Using electromagnetic forces to move nanotube robots around your body. This is fact, not fiction. Starting to teach these things how to actually code themselves, providing awareness to the technology.
Intrabody nano network. Not just a neural interface, linking your minds up as a hive mind, but also linking your bodies up so that your bodies, every single aspect of your body can be monitored by the computer, by AI. Moderna has said that the vaccine is an operating system. That's what they're installing into you, is an operating system. You think about a graphene-based operating system.
This cascades will lead to a cell death or cell cycle arrest.
Your immune systems have all been compromised already, and you have nanometals in your body. You have aluminum, strontium, barium, you got thorium, cadmium, lead, mercury, lithium, and that's coming down on you daily. Important that you somehow detox it off your skin, because once these nanoparticles get into the skin, then they start to break the skin barrier down, and then they further assemble inside your system.
So basically, when the people had the injectable, now they have a system that's running through the body, and that's going to rewrite the DNA and damage it. And now for people that haven't had it, it can actually affect us as well. Like if you're out there shopping in the store, or if you're out anywhere, you don't want to be around people that have had it. Like a masseuse that was working on a client was working on someone that had the injectable, and then the next day she actually broke out in a really bad rash. So you want to steer clear of that, or you want to build up a charge to help defend yourself.
Protect your DNA. Your DNA is what they're after.
This is quite large, as you said, complex. It almost looks like a pyramid, stacks on top of each other.
We know about this concept of self-spreading vaccines that grows with EMF and electrical frequency. So who knows whether or not it's also in water, in food, you know, it's being sprayed on us. So it's everywhere.
Thank you.
All right, we don't have much time left. It's getting a bit late. But that's okay. Basically, the most important takeaway from the whole part about synthesis is that there's only one acid called silicic acid that will break silicon dioxide down. And Tony notes that the digestive system cannot break down silica. Okay, and then here we discuss physicochemical properties. So we're talking about colloidal silver of various, like its size, type of, whether it's crystalline or amorphous. All right, so there is, okay. It's interesting that they put here diamaceous earth as 5 microns. I would possibly question that. But okay. All right, since we may not have much time, I'll just go through and, I mean, if you want to watch along with me, I'm just going to be going through the different properties of silicon dioxide, because as I make in the future more jugular, more direct and like edited videos about silicon dioxide toxicity to hopefully, you know, spread the message and save some people that can be saved and, you know, who will listen. Then, you know, I'd prefer to have a more in-depth scientific understanding of these structures. So if you're interested, you can follow along. If not, we have more direct, actionable videos that you can check out on our channel. Okay, crystallinity. In crystalline structures such as quartz and porosilts, the arrangement of atoms is ordered in all dimensions. According to the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry, the atoms must be arranged periodically with long-range order and produce sharp maxima in a diffraction experiment to observe X-ray diffraction crystallinity. The size threshold for observing crystallinity depends on the unit cell size, which is the size of the repeated units in a crystal. For materials with large unit cells, such as porosils, the minimum particle size required is about 10 nanometers to observe a distinct, sharp XRD, which is X-ray diffraction pattern. Amorphous silica may present some short-range order, but lacks long-range order in 3 dimensions and does not exhibit a sharp X-ray diffraction pattern. Of note, the surface of a crystal represents a discontinuity that can be seen as a defect. With the presence of a less structured or even partially amorphous rim, crystals may behave like amorphous particles. Thus, particles with an ordering at limited length scales or with amorphous regions may be classified as amorphous. Interesting. Particle size and morphology. Nanoparticles are obtained by direct synthesis of silica sol or by crystallization of nano-sized crystals of quartz or porosils. The particle size is determined by the synthesis parameters. Amorphous silica sol particles tend to adopt the spherical shape so as to reach a minimum of interfacial surface area. What is interfacial? Search Google. Facial. Included between two faces of a crystal or other solid. Okay. Minimum surface area. The particle size of commercial silica sols prepared from sodium silicate is from 10 to 25 nanometers. Sols with large primary particles can be prepared from TEOS by, don't know what that is, synthesis. For example, okay, grinding and milling processes reduce particle size, right? These techniques are most often applied to quartz, silica gel, and vitreous silica. The obtained products generally have a broad size distribution. Okay, so these are about, I'd say almost exactly 10 nanometers across. These are, oh, the scale is perfect, 100 nanometers across. And then this is zeosil. I'm trying to figure out how you would scale these. Maybe like 5 microns in width and maybe 2 microns in diameter, width. Sorry, I'm comparing apples with oranges. I'm comparing this with that. Apologies. You get what I mean. So this would be like 5 microns by 2.5. And this is the height and that's the width. Anyway, crystalline particles exhibits crystal planes at the surface, and the morphology of the crystalline nanoparticles depends on the crystal class, such as cubic, hexagonal, tetragonal, and orthorhombic. That's orthorhombic.
Orthorhombic.
Ah, I said it right. Okay. Of or denoting a crystal system or three-dimensional geometrical arrangement having three unequal axes at right angles. Okay. For all nanomaterials in aqueous environment, the primary nano-sized silica particles tend to form aggregates. They naturally aggregate together. And in the body, of course, that is quite problematic. Aqueous just means, let me double check. An aqueous solution is, I'm glad I searched this up, pertaining to or related to, similar to or dissolved in water. So that's an aqueous solution, dissolved in water. The primary nano-sized silica particles tend to form aggregates. Okay, porosity. Ooh, Tony's got a lot of comments here. Okay, porosity. According to the, whatever that is, IUPAC, pores are classified according to their diameter into micropores, mesopores, and macropores. So micropores are less than 2 nanometers. Mesopores are 2 to 50 nanometers in diameter, right? And macropores are greater than 50 nanometers. Amorphous sol particles can be microporous or non-porous. The porosity of Stober silica can be tuned by adapting the synthesis parameters. Something just occurred to me. If we are to say that zeolite, for example, has these pores and it attracts and holds and absorbs to all of these toxins and let's assume graphene or heavy metals or even viruses, if you believe in that. I don't know whether I do. I really don't know my stance on that. I'm too busy with this to figure that one out. But if you have that process, and then you said, but the silica actually isn't being cleared out of the body, it's accumulating, then what you're saying is that this amazing chelating agent, this zeolite or whatever it is actually forming a synthetic biology, that actually harbors and provides an environment for these heavy metals or let's say graphene or whatever it is. And if you think about it, actually, when you have a structure like the zeolite that video showed us, or like this, for example, that this is atomic representation, but assume this is on a larger nano scale, and this is the zeolite. This can act as a scaffold, literally. A DNA, for example, like they use the DNA scaffolds for nano self-assembly. This can be a kind of impromptu, non-weaponized scaffold that will form and harbor all of these toxic elements that will form synthetic biology that will bind to proteins and enzymes and biological elements inside the body or bacteria. Or even fungus, because you can imagine the toxicity that's going on there. And then, on top of that, our time is up. All right. We will continue this on another day. Heal your DNA. Learn to protect yourself, and God bless.
The vaccine, which the CDC
She's like, have you been having, you know, jaw pain, headaches, spinal pain? I was like, yes. And it's only been on like one side of my spine. And that was the side that the majority of the spike protein was running through. I knew that there was a major issue going on with the graphene oxide. One of the things that I've always known is that mRNA vaccines do shed.
Using electromagnetic forces to move nanotube robots around your body. This is fact, not fiction. Starting to teach these things how to actually code themselves, providing awareness to the technology.
Intrabody nano network. Not just a neural interface, linking your minds up as a hive mind, but also linking your bodies up so that your bodies, every single aspect of your body can be monitored by the computer, by AI. Moderna has said that the vaccine is an operating system. That's what they're installing into you, is an operating system. You think about it, graphene-based operating system.
This cascades will lead to a cell death or cell cycle arrest.
Your immune systems have all been compromised already, and you have nanometals in your body. You have aluminum, strontium, barium, you got thorium, cadmium, lead, mercury, lithium, and that's coming down on you daily. Important that you somehow detox it off your skin, because once these nanoparticles get into the skin, then they start to break the skin barrier down, and then they further assemble inside your system.
So basically, when the people had the injectable, now they have a system that's running through the body, and that's going to rewrite the DNA and damage it. And now for people that haven't had it, it can actually affect us as well. Like if you're out there shopping in the store, or if you're out anywhere, you don't want to be around people that have had it. Like a masseuse that was working on a client was working on someone that had the injectable, and then the next day she actually broke out in a really bad rash. So you want to steer clear of that, or you want to build up a charge to help defend yourself.
Protect your DNA. Your DNA is what they're after.
This
is quite large, as you said, complex. It almost looks like a pyramid, stacks on top of each other.
We know about this concept of self-spreading vaccines that grows with EMF and electrical frequency. So who knows whether or not it's also in water, in food, it's being sprayed on us. So it's everywhere.